Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically, we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Alex, and my voice is too ruined for me to go out on stage tonight.
Aww.
I'm Pippin, and I really love musicals.
I'm Kat, and I did not watch a musical or a movie. I read the screenplay.
That is so extra.
Or lazy.
Wow. Aww.
And I'm Brendan, and I want to be a producer.
Do you want to be one of these producers, though? Ooh,
God, no.
You want to actually make good stuff.
Yeah, we can discuss that later.
Are you willing to make $1 million, though, on something of this quality?
Well, $1 million, holy crap.
A million?
It sounds so quaint nowadays, doesn't it?
I know.
And on that subject, today we're talking about the movie / musical, The Producers. So spoilers abound. If you want other specific content warnings, check out the show notes on nostorysacred.com. Thanks to listener John for the request.
Thanks, John. Much appreciated.
Thanks, buddy.
For those of you who haven't seen the movie or the musical, the summary from IMDb is, after putting together another Broadway flop, down-on-his-luck producer Max Bialystok teams up with the timid accountant Leo Bloom in a get-rich-quick scheme to put on the world's worst show.
How quick is it to put on a Broadway show?
Depends on how bad it is.
Because I was actually wondering while watching the movie, you know, you have to do out-of-town tryouts.
Well, they were doing tryouts for Hitler there.
And by tryouts, I mean you put on the whole production for a few weeks.
No, Pip. No.
Wait. What about the critic screening? Or not screening. Wasn't there...
Oh, God. They would not have a critic screening for a Max Bialystok play. Come on.
But no, I mean... You know, when Pippin got revived on Broadway...
Did she?
Name drop. The production was in Boston first.
Boston.
And then moved to Broadway.
Yeah.
That's part of the process.
And reading the a Wikipedia page for the producer Earth Musical, they started in Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Chicago's a big theater town, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, let me just briefly interrupt us. Are we trying to look for realism in our comedy?
A comedy should be grounded in reality, Kat. We both know this.
This is Mel Brooks. We're talking about the master of farce.
Yeah.
I have a confession.
Okay.
I don't think I actually like Mel Brooks movies.
Wait, guys. Pip, did you forget about Robin Hood Men in Tights?
It doesn't actually age that well, Kat.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, my God. Death of a childhood happening right in front of everybody listening.
But yeah, no. I mean, I didn't really... Because I watched the original movie for this.
As did I.
I didn't rewatch the musical. So I didn't really like the original Producers. I didn't like Young Frankenstein. I didn't really like Blazing Saddles. I don't really care for Spaceballs.
Happened on the way to the forum. Is that him?
No.
Oh, all right. Okay, I'm sorry. My bad.
That's like Sondheim, isn't it?
Sondheim did the lyrics.
Okay.
It's a very early Sondheim lyrics. Someone else did the music.
Okay.
Same with Gypsy.
Here's the thing, Pip. I can actually agree with you on not liking the original Producers thing, because I kind of went in because I had like fond memories of it when I was a kid, which is probably says something about me. But like I kind of go in watching the 1967 version first, and yeah, they had like all sorts of like kind of not dead scenes, but like just slapstick scenes and stuff like that.
And it's other like, scenes that went on too long.
Which I wonder if it was just a side effect of just that time frame in terms of film.
It was also his first movie.
What?
Was it?
Oh, yeah, that really? Was Mel Brooks' first movie.
Oh, bless.
Which is why I'm willing to forgive a lot of the misses on Match on Action with the cuts.
It's funny to hear you guys say this, because again, I've never seen the movie. I've never seen the play. We tried to watch like 5 minutes of a high school production on YouTube. bad mistake.
Oops.
And you know what, though? I read the screenplay, and it was surprisingly tight and funny. Like, it was, it moved fast. It didn't have any loose bits. You know, it was successful.
Now, but which version of the screenplay did you have? The 1967 or the 2000s?
It was the very early one, because there's some really hilarious, what's it called? It's not stage notes. What am I thinking of?
Liner notes?
No. It's literally
stage directions.
Like, stage directions. Oh. Yes. There's some really funny stage directions, where you can see Mel Brooks implying that one of the old ladies is getting fingered in one of the scenes. Oh, dude, yeah. But it's so delicately done in the stage directions. It's hilarious. It's a beautiful piece of writing.
Whereas in the production itself, in the movie, it was, yeah.
I mean, yeah, there are some points where you're like, well, why are we actually writing out the sound effect? But, you know, I was surprised. It was a fast and enjoyable read. I see why it got made.
Well, it had some trouble getting made.
Oh, yeah?
Well, because no one wanted to talk about Hitler.
Nobody wanted a comedy about Hitler. What?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which is why Mel Brooks had to direct it himself.
Huh.
And then he got final edit on it, on his first movie, and that's why he was able to get final edit on every single one of his next movies, because he got it on his first.
Aww. Ah. Nice.
Clever.
Yeah. Well, Mel Brooks is kind of one of the few people who can do a movie about Hitler
and get away with it.
Yeah.
So what else about the movie? One thing I will give credit for the original for is that I kind of liked just the characters themselves. Like, you know, the actors, you know, Zero, Mostel,
yeah.
Gene Wilder. I would take Gene Wilder in a heartbeat over Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. Like, I'm having like a little flashback to him in like a purple suit from Willy Wonka. Mm-hmm. I just...
Yeah, we know he can sing. Come on.
I mean, at one point, Gene Wilder as Leo Bloom like cries a single tear. And I'm like, damn, son. That's acting.
Yeah, like one of my notes was like, man, I miss Gene Wilder.
I miss Gene Wilder too.
Yeah.
We all do.
So let's talk about just, I guess, the story as a whole.
Okay.
So we have these two characters, dubious morality, right?
Is Leo Bloom really dubious, or is he merely weak-willed?
He goes in on the scheme.
True.
I think he has anxiety and confidence issues.
I think he gets seduced as any of, just as much as any of the little old ladies do.
Yeah.
He wants a friend.
He wants to be a producer.
On Broadway.
And really, who does it hurt?
Who does it hurt?
Well, the actors, the directors, the...
Little old ladies?
Yeah. Who, if it is a truly flop, probably won't get any work after that.
Oh, poor guys. Well, the stagehands will probably get work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're union.
Yeah. Oh, man. What I see with the overall story is that we have a couple characters of, again, dubious morality. We can talk about the morals and such of Leo Bloom in detail in a bit, but you have them coming up with a scheme, and because they're not on the right side of morality, the scheme backfires and it becomes a hit. That's why, at least from a meta story sense, Springtime for Hitler hit, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from like a symbolic level, like the way in horror movies when the girl has sex, she has to die. So these guys, of course, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, it is a you know, classic comic trope, hoisted by your own petard.
No, not this comeuppance.
I mean, I think their mistake was for going for bad instead of just mediocre.
True.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Because that is a known thing. When you have something so bad, it's good.
Like The Room.
Getting a wide release.
Yeah.
Snakes on a plane. Remember, like, I think that that's what... I think the saving of that movie was the fact that Samuel L. Jackson looked at it and was like, I will do this movie provided you don't change the title. Like, it is what it says on the tin.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what I'm getting when I look at that movie.
Yeah, like, but hoisting by their own petard aside, the reason why Springtime for Hitler worked in that universe, at least, and probably it would work in at least late 2000s Broadway, is that it pushed a topic, you know, a hated character out from realism and into the farcical bizarre. That, yeah. Of course, the audience is going to be like, oh, we can laugh at that guy. He was an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I don't know how this played in the actual films or what have you, but the script that I read show them, they are really offended by the beginning of the play where it looks like it's being taken seriously. Yeah. And then they see these ridiculous fucking actors come out and are like, and they're like, oh,
my expectations, they were defied. Oh my God, comedy.
Yeah. This is and serious. It's satire.
Sweet. Yeah. I can feel intellectual now. No, that sounded way too sarcastic.
I mean, but then you have to think, like, sort of random as, like, is that how we're supposed to enjoy the whole experience?
Oh. Springtime, yeah. It was just like that's why it worked. It turned what was probably in the original screenplay Springtime for Hitler into this farce because Leo Bloom and Max Bialystok they managed to fail at failing,
which
that's
is
how much
always
they fail.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
True.
People failing is hilarious in a comedy, and then people failing at trying to fail
is more hilarious.
They tried to use tropes for themselves. Never say good luck on opening night, or else something bad will happen. But they forgot that the bad thing for them
would be
is a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was like, never say good luck on opening night, you guys. Just don't do it.
Just don't.
One thing I did do for this was actually watched both versions in one night.
Whoa.
So I got to have it was a snowy night, so I was kind of, you know, trapped at home. Not trapped, but didn't really feel inclined.
Knock once for yes or twice for no. Are you safe?
That was yes, yes.
Okay. Nice.
But what occurred to me as I kind of watched them both in succession was it seemed like you got the almost like distilling of the original version into a much more tight version in the, I guess, perhaps Broadway play that the second movie was, I guess, strongly based on.
Yeah.
I believe it was just like an adaptation of the Broadway play. So yeah, I hope so.
It stars the same actors as the original Broadway. So,
oh, I did not know that.
I'm here for your musical trivia.
Thank you, Pip. I knew you're here for something.
Wow.
Oh, man. But, like, it basically just flowed a lot faster, a lot better. You know, we kind of avoided the 60s slapstick scenes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just gonna say, I didn't rewatch the musical. It's been a little bit since I've watched it. But from what I remember, despite the fact that it's the longer movie, it goes by faster.
Fast.
Yeah.
Well, the other bits of appreciation I could have for it is that it felt like it gave all the characters a bit more agency than the original did.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like Ula's there for an audition as opposed to just being hired, you know?
Yeah.
Literally called a toy, by the way. Not that I'm upset. Yeah.
A Swedish adult toy? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
He just says he's going to go buy himself a toy, and then next thing we get is Ula. And she dances, and guess where the camera is? Not her face.
In the screenplay I read, there's a bit more of a discussion as to what kind of toy she is.
Oh.
Let me assure you, in the movie, her face isn't even in frame when she dances.
Aww.
Although, keep in mind, this was 1967, so we were not peak enlightenment yet.
Are we now?
No. Nah, far from it.
Although, strangely, and this feels a little bit weird, but, so there's the director in the screenplay I read is quite clearly painted as an effeminate gay man.
Oh, and in the Broadway musical, they tune that up to 11 to the point where the Hitler parody changes from 60s beatnik type or 60s Andy Warhol type, mm-hmm. the hippie type, changes from that to just flamboyant Hitler instead.
See, so what's weird is that in the screenplay, though, it was... I thought it was surprising that the reason that he was the worst director in New York or whatever was not because he was gay. I was very surprised by that. Being it was the 60s, I'm like, guys, I kind of expected to, you know, think that these people were assholes on more than one level. But no, it was implied more that he was a bad director because he thought this was a good idea. like, my God, I can just picture it instantly. Like, really? Really? You can? And that's so.
It's like having like those telephone fraud schemes. Like, they know they get somebody when somebody says yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I was surprised that they didn't go for that low hanging.
Wow. Oh. As we all suddenly get it.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a member,
thank you and good night,
of the LGBTQ community, I apologize wholeheartedly for this entire podcast. And or more specifically, my part in it. Please, for the love of God, someone else talk.
There's also a bit in the musical where there's a dig at lesbians, and that was fun.
Yeah. Wait, when?
Oh, introducing his crew.
In the musical, we also meet his production crew so that we can have a whole musical number about him.
Uh-huh.
And it goes through all the men who are flamboyant. And then his lighting designer, who he has clear disdain for, Sherlyn Markowitz, who is this deep-voiced... And she's the one who says that the musical needs tits. And
this in was, a very bass voice.
This
yeah.
was not in she my screenplay.
No, but that's because no.
That was the musical.
Yeah,
the new.
I see. That's a little disappointing. It's a little. I don't know. Have you guys ever watched the documentary The Celluloid Closet?
Nope.
No, but it sounds like I should. Just from the title.
You should. It's amazing, but it shows the progression of LGBT actors, characters, or what have you. From like the beginning of film onwards, and then how actually there was like weirdly a role for people to play that encompassed that sexuality before the Hays Code.
Oh, the Hays Code fucked everyone over.
Yeah. And then the Hays Code happened and everybody was fucked. And even the stereotypical, but not necessarily negative characters that had been there previously were completely shoved out the airlock.
And all those traits got plastered over the villains.
Passed over to villains, because, of course, people who have naughty, naughty inclinations should come to bad ends. And therefore, people who come to bad ends should have naughty, naughty inclinations.
Weird how that happens.
For listeners who might be unaware of the Hays Code.
Thank you.
It is... I don't think it was ever, like, a law or anything.
Nope. It was voluntary, those assholes.
But it was one of those weird Hollywood everyone has to do it things.
Mm-hmm.
It was a set of codes of what was allowed in movies, allowed in quotes. I don't think you could actually show anyone be killed on screen. It had to happen, off screen.
I think so.
Someone could shoot the gun on screen, but the actual hitting of the body couldn't be shown. If someone murders someone or kills someone for any reason, they're bad and cannot have a good end.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why the ending to Rebecca was ruined. again, not that I'm still bitter.
Huh.
Also, this is why in, for instance, the Dick Van Dyke Show, what the hell are their names?
Separate beds.
Yep, separate twin beds.
Yep.
Can't show people in one big bed. That might mean sexy times.
Yeah. So all these rules, bad people have to be punished in the end. Good people have to... get rewards.
gay people have to be punished in the end.
Because that's bad.
Rebel without a cause. Ever wonder why What's-His-Head died? Now you know.
And then one day in the 50s or 60s, everyone just stopped believing in the Hays Code. And we got fun movies again.
And poof, it went away.
Yeah. And that's why suddenly Ulez was dancing in her bikini.
Yeah.
But also, like, weirdly, when I was reading the screenplay, it reminded me of the, you know, the director reminded me of the earlier appearances of LGBT characters. When, you know, the joke wasn't necessarily about them being who they were. It was some other related thing.
Why they agreed to do this.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, bear in mind, I am reading a thing and possibly putting my own spin on it.
Anyway, on a lighter change of subject, when you mentioned the screenplay thing there, a thought did occur when you mentioned the screenplays there. It was just, when they were going through the piles of screenplays, what instantly came to mind were a couple things. One, the slush pile.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh, guys, do you think it's time for me to tell that story?
Oh, what is this story?
What's the story, Kat?
Tales from the slush pile?
What's the story, Morning Glory?
This is a tale from the slush pile. You ready?
Yes.
In the 90s, back in the day. I may or may not have read slush manuscripts for various peoples that shall remain unnamed. When one is reading, when one is the first reader, you get given a manuscript from the slush. These are manuscripts that have been submitted to the publisher, unagented. They're just stuck in an envelope and mailed in with the hope that an editor will read it, like it, and buy it. However, editors are very busy people, and you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of manuscripts come in quite regularly.
And every year,
daily.
I would say, you know, hundreds in the week, and so just start multiplying that up, and so you start, you know, having to set up some criteria, and one of the criteria, of course, is having some first readers, and these are people who, you know, go through it and determine right away whether or not it should go up to the next level. So an actual editor. And so I was a first reader for a while. I read many, many very terrible things. I read a couple of okay ones. But there were some that were, let us say, famous. the kind that, you know, you didn't necessarily return. You just kept and brought out when everyone was drunk. And then there was the special one. I think it's important that I bring it up during this podcast, because this was a manuscript that had been sent to more than one publisher over the course of years, and publishers, and it was like a legend when you got it. You didn't really believe that it really happened until it came to you.
Oh my God.
I never thought this would happen to me.
It was a manuscript that had been printed all on red paper so that you could not photocopy it and keep it for your very own, because that's how good it was.
That's how they get you.
Wow.
Now,
even if the first reader liked it, production would hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah. People at home, nobody cares enough about your book. Stop that.
And also, don't go for a red paper. Use light blue ink.
Then it's hard to read and hard to copy.
Yeah. Well, that's how video game booklets did it.
Well, that's because it's non-repro blue, man. That stuff's the shit. Although I'm not sure it works anymore with our highfalutin copiers. Anyway, guys, the name of this book. I unfortunately did not read it, but you know who did? Dad.
I know what book you're going for.
You know what book this is? Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce Hitler in Oz.
Very apropos.
Very apropos. This book, from what I understand, the storyline is, instead of dying in the bunker, Hitler and Eva Braun are transported to Oz, at which point shenanigans ensue. And all I really know about this, because it was never under serious consideration, of course it fucking wasn't, But Dad did read it, and he refused to stop reading it. At one point, we almost were late for a rather important do in the city when he didn't want to stop reading because he really wanted to know what Hitler was going to do now that he had the flying monkeys.
Oh, to be fair, now I do too.
What did Hitler do with the flying monkeys? That's what that experience is like. I know exactly what the characters from Springtime for Hitler, the producers were going through.
Yeah.
And except we didn't publish it.
I was going to say there is an Adolf Hitler in Oz available on Amazon.
Oh, good for him. You know what?
I'm glad.
Wait, did he self-publish?
Now's the time. We will, you know what? We'll link it in the transcript. God bless.
Well, is he... Are you on the level?
Eh. Good for them if they managed it.
Fair enough.
If somebody else came up with the idea at the same time, good for them. If, by God, somebody in a publisher were like, you know what? I bet I could make this work. Good for them, too.
This is the time we live in now. Publish it.
I just remember there were all sorts of just gems within the slush piles. Mm-hmm. Like... I'll change concepts to protect the innocent. But like, wasn't there one that had like a magic sword and the author went into great detail describing certain biological effects it had on the wielder's, lower regions,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. It's hidden gems.
You know what? It's a learning experience. You learn a whole lot really, really fast.
About people.
About people and about what does and does not work.
And about yourself.
Mm-hmm. And about yourself. That's true. You're like, I don't know why I like this.
Mm. Oh, God.
But I was one of those weirdos because I had no life I didn't just, you know, look at the first few pages and are like, well, this is garbage. I could tell immediately that it was garbage, but I would be like, you know what? Maybe there's a gem hidden deeper. There never was. Never.
That's an important thing also for your kids listening at home. Be interesting within the first 5 pages. That's when you grab your audience.
I mean, first sentence, if you can manage.
I'm going to put out right well, too. Yeah. Although, some people could get me in the first 5 pages and still disappoint me later.
Yeah.
Well, that's why the general rule of thumb that I use is give it the first 60 pages, and if it's still not, then no. This is for, like, novel length.
That's actually a rule that I made up, at least, I may have gotten it from somewhere else. I made it for Pip.
Yep.
Oh.
Still feeling that betrayal.
When she started reading, because she's like, I don't want to read. Meh, I'm young. And
you know what? I came out here to have a good time.
And you honestly are being attacked right now.
I really am.
Yeah. And so I'm like, you can't stop. I don't know why you listened to me. Like, what was I going to do? Like, glue your eyes open? We're going to do like a Clockwork Orange situation? No.
Yes.
I mean... I was young. You were my big sister. I trusted you.
Okay. And to be fair, then you read the Enchanted Forest Chronicles. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's a fair point. My strategy was find book with dragons.
And then you somehow passed that same quote unquote rule to Alex?
Listen, it worked.
Yeah. It started with Harry Potter and moved on to a turtle.
And then crack cocaine, and we all know how this ends.
Yeah.
Face down in a gutter, Tolkien surrounded you. Dirty sheets of Brad Sanderson.
Ew.
All right, guys.
So, do you think we've gone over, at least in very broad strokes, our thoughts on the producers itself?
Sure. Yeah. Okay, fuck it.
Well, producers, the production side of storytelling. Sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah. I mean, the story itself is fairly straightforward, as we already said. It's a comeuppance story, so.
Yeah.
But it works well. Like, simple is successful. Thank you. You can just put that on a mug right there.
Boom. Ship it.
Cut the check.
So if you guys don't mind, I kind of got hit with a little bit of inspiration before recording tonight. So do you mind if I try and just jump right into our story treatments?
Go for it.
Let's do this.
Let's do this thing.
Let's see if you can get a gasp out of me.
Oh, good freaking luck. there you go. I got a laugh.
yes, that's so difficult with me.
So what I went with here is that I didn't really feel like doing a rewrite on the producers. I'm leaving that to you guys. You can handle it. Instead, I just kind of wanted to take a similar concept, which is to say taking like a meta story of having a ridiculous story concept and making it work, and somehow it just sparks and is popular. Maybe it's more of a desperate young creative type wanting to make it on Broadway. So it's more of a like a virtue story as opposed to a comeuppance story, you know? Mm-hmm. I was just going through the list of like, okay, what could be an equivalent of Springtime for Hitler that might work nowadays in a very, very bizarre sense? And it's actually a lot harder than it seems just trying to go for like the theater of the absurd, right? Mm-hmm. So I tried going through like really deep topics that you could take into farce. And then I kind of settled on like, okay, what are some just, to make it easy on myself, what are some movies I could try and adapt into musical format? Yeah, there's like the softball ones, like my first note was like, oh, The Room, the musical, it'll be great. You know, you can have because I was watching the Shmo Yoho channel, and they had like a Songify The Room, and it was actually really catchy. And it's like, okay, cool. Next, though, because I feel like The Room's a little bit overdone.
Oh, hi, Mark.
And then, yeah, oh, hi, Mark. Okay. But then, like, the next idea was just, like, a sentence that I wrote. It was like, oh, Home Alone, the musical. We could have a singing Joe Pesci. It'll be great. But then what I settled on was Musical of the Rings, a musical romp through Middle Earth. We can have, like, Neil Patrick Harris as Legolas. We could have Josh Gad as Gimli. And just imagine their intro song where it's like, I never met a dwarf I didn't like. And the other one singing, I never met an elf I didn't like. It could be great. But then the meta story is just, again, what I was talking about is like a virtue play where you have like the main characters, the, you know, producer in this case, trying to make this doomed Middle Earth musical work. And instead it kind of becomes like a reference to, are you guys familiar with the doomed Broadway play that was Spider-Man Enter the Dark?
Yeah.
So basically, this is a roundabout way of saying it, but I want a movie adaptation of a story like that, where it's just like, they're trying really hard, but like, just doom and calamity keep on happening. And you get like little snippets of what the actual musical would be, and it's just, you know, really absurd stuff. Like, just imagine Hugo Weaving returning to do a song and dance number.
He could do
that
it.
That kind of stuff.
But wait, Pip, are you thinking the same thing I'm thinking?
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Viggo Morrison giving a solo?
Nope. Although I did imagine him in a horse costume the second you spoke. No. I'm just wondering if anybody else remembers Bilbo Baggins.
Oh yeah, there was that whole entire. There was that.
Leonard Nimoy did.
Oh, yeah.
Did a musical version.
House and nerds are just suddenly really upset and they're not sure why.
Yeah, Brent, when there's a whip,
there's a way.
When there is.
Nerds. No, there's already an established precedent for music inside Lord of the Rings, and we're golden. And you know what? We're going to bring back Tom Bombadil. Come on.
Well, you know,
more faithful
he is
adaptation.
A merry fellow.
Here's the thing, though. Actually, you may have hit something even better. So part of what made Springtime for Hitler so, like, seriously, guys, seriously, is because, of course, Hitler. It was not that long before. It was, like, what, 20 years odd?
No.
Prior? No. Like, it had mm-hmm. not been a long
that
time.
Long.
And so what if you had your story, but like you literally had Leonard Nimoy, who has passed away. And so you have some director being like, if only there was some way we could bring him back. And so you're like casting Leonard, it would be offensive as fuck. And that's weirdly in the style of the producers.
It could be yet another error in this comedy of errors that happens where like everybody else involved in production is like, is this seriously a good idea? Did you really just hire a Leonard Nimoy impersonator?
And it's like a really trashy one too, like who's clearly only ever done impressions of Spock.
Oh, so it could just be like Bilbo Baggins.
His hair's cut badly.
And not even a Leonard Nimoy Spock. Zachary Quinto Spock.
Oh, God. Even worse.
Like, we need you to be up. But, like, then you still get that wonderful, like, the chorus line of different Leonard Nimoys.
Oh, they could be doing a little can-can number in the background. It'll be great.
There's the singing Leonard Nimoys and there's the dancing Leonard Nimoys. We're only seeing the dancing ones right now. No, I'm sorry. We're only seeing the singing ones right now. Oh.
Yes.
So just so everyone knows, there was a Lord of the Rings musical on the West End.
Was there?
Yeah. It looks like there were two productions, one in Toronto and one West End. The West End one was in 2007. And so far as I can see, those were the only productions. It hasn't been revived.
I wonder why.
Mostly negative reviews from critics.
Now, this is going to be treating it, you know, again, the entire point of the movie is that we, or even just Broadway play, who cares, whatever, is that you don't get the full musical of the rings in the way, Saruman has a total badass power ballad. It's amazing.
But here's the thing. Well, actually, that's one of those classic writing rules. Like, if somebody is a fantastic speechmaker and so on, never write down his full speech, because inevitably you'll have somebody be like, well, that was bullshit. I don't know. I'm not going to do shit with that. That's one of the problems I have with Orson Scott Card, the first Ender's Game.
Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Is because he puts like the full text of the siblings, like discussions as to why we should take over the world or something. And it's like, I'm not really convinced.
As a blog reader, I'd be like, these guys sound crazy.
Yeah. A little wordy. Yeah. You stick them on, down flag them on Reddit. But like on the other hand, if you have, actually, this is a really good example again from Lord of the Rings. If you say instead, the sound of these, wraiths was so horrific, or the sound of them caused people to fall to the ground. In terror. Well, then you're not saying exactly what they sound like, but you're making the readers imagine for themselves what kind of song or what kind of sound would induce somebody to fall down in terror.
Oh my God, a chorus line of ring wraiths. Yes. Oh, it's writing itself.
But what we got in the movies for the ring wraiths was someone carrying a bit of sheet metal and scraping it across the door.
Well, no, that was Philippa Boyne screaming.
Really?
Well, or it might have been Peter Jackson's wife doing the scream. Because she did a really good ring wraith scream.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
Back to Musical of the Rings. Yes. Do you guys have any other questions or thoughts before we move on?
What's the ending number? What's the 11 o'clock number?
Well, come on, Pip. We already know that... there's this climactic thing of the confrontation with Sauron's armies outside of the gate, outside the Black Gates, while simultaneously Sam and Pippin in the background are climbing up Mount Doom. So you have this Sam dual number. So while in the background you have Sam and Frodo, it's because you're there, Pip. So while in the background you have Sam and Frodo climbing the set of Mount Doom in the background, and you have this kind of dual number where you have the singer who's doing Aragorn singing a very inspiring ballad. It's kind of like a Let It Go kind of like musical build you up kind of song, while the Sam and Frodo bit is kind of very downtrodden, very
give up the ring, Mr. Frodo, give up the ring.
Yeah.
No, Aragorn is doing a reprise of the first act ending number.
Ooh, I like it.
No, you guys, this is sounding too good.
You're right. Well, that's the point, right? It's actually going to be good in the end in that play because it's a virtue play. It's rewarding this character, the long-suffering producer or whatever who's put all their heart and soul and money into this production, and it's actually going to pay off in the end.
Aww.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't screw over their backers. They got it on Kickstarter. It's good. It's okay.
Right. And my question is Sauron the Diva?
No, strangely, Sam
Adina
is.
Adina Menzel as Sauron.
Ooh, Sam?
Yeah, I just said, strangely, Sam is.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's the hero of the piece.
No one ever actually thinks about that. Sam is the one who carried, literally carried, Frodo to the end.
Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, I think a lot of people think about that.
Yeah, it's a pretty common one.
But he doesn't even realize how common it is. He thinks he's just put upon.
Aww.
No, he thinks he's the only one who has ever thought of that.
It's true. Oh, so he goes around. It'd be hilarious if he's like going around just like telling people like, no, no, really, you need to think about this. Just put it through your head, okay? And they're all like, no, we got it.
We get it.
Know. He's like, no, but do you really agree. Get it? Because I don't think you're getting it.
The actor who plays Smeagol is just the sweetest guy.
Aww.
And very nice, he isn't bringing up the theory that Gollum is the hero. Because he's the one who, you know, bites off the ring and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually destroys it.
Okay. So, any other questions? Or are we good to go to the next one?
Let's go to the next one.
Hey, Kat. Hey, Kat.
What? What?
You know what that is?
No.
It's a bus.
Oh, man, let's push her.
Wait, I'm going to try a special effect. Ready? Did that work?
Yeah. It depends entirely on what you were going for.
I just always think it's really funny when comedians take their microphones and hit their heads against it to make a sound.
Oh, I always think that's sweetie. Funny.
Okay. It might sound great on Audacity, okay. So we'll keep
we'll
it.
We'll find out. Anyway. Well, fuck y'all.
Turnabout's fair play.
Yeah.
And that's when I find out Kat was also going to do Musical of the Rings. Oh.
Okay, you know what? Actually, I think I'm going to... steal what I suspect might be Pip's.
Shit.
Yep.
God damn it.
You'll rue the fucking day. You ready for this? Oh, why are we talking about the men at all? What about those little old ladies?
Oh, not what I was going to do. Fuck you.
All right.
Okay, so little old ladies.
Little
go
old
for
ladies.
It.
I think it'd be great if there was a conspiracy of little old ladies throughout the entire background. Who discover that Max there has been, quote-unquote, fucking them over. because we see in the beginning, at least according to what I read, we see that two of them pass by each other. Presumably, you know, and they're both hiding their faces or what have you. But that means that there is a connection point. He's not being as careful as he should be in terms of keeping his l'amours separate. I think that there should be a conspiracy of little old ladies who all have started sort of figuring out the deal, but they're like, okay, we'll share him. It's fine. And then they're like, hey, did he talk to you about his new play? And it's like, what? Yeah, actually. Did he offer you like really good terms? Like, yeah, me too. And so they find out that he's done this thing and they figure out, because they're not dumb, they're just little and old, that clearly there is shenanigans afoot. And so they say, no. No, we are going to make this a goddamn success. And so I would just like to see the other side of this play where, you know, so there's like a whisper campaign in the course of
production,
you know, like in the course of the first viewing where they're like, oh, but wait, no, it's not offensive. It's clever. I get it. Don't you get it? And there was
Yeah.
And then there's these little old ladies being like, yes, that will teach you.
All according to plan.
They found, what's his head, and they're like, hey, you should go in for this role as Hitler.
You know.
It'll be great.
I mean, but you could also have a lot of, you know, it could still be a comedy. You'd have lots of them being like, well, shit, now he's done this. How do we fix this?
Basically, when you're talking about that conspiracy there, it does remind me, in both productions, I was impressed that the other actors in the play instantly went on board with making it a comedy instead. Like, it happened in the original. Mm-hmm. I think to a certain extent it happened in the Broadway remake and all that, where they're like, we're yes-anding this.
And exactly. But what if that was the plan all along?
It's all for that applause, applause, applause.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, so that's where I'm going with this. I'm bringing it to the lady folk. I don't appreciate, or rather, you know, I don't mind their position. They seem to be getting plenty out of the whole deal that they have going on with Max. Good for them.
Yeah. He is basically a gigolo.
Yeah, I don't think there's any illusions there though. I don't think that they're secretly thinking, definitely it's me, but.
He's the one.
But I love the idea that, you know what, they're just going to – they refuse to be bilked over this. They're going to make sure this is a success, and that will teach him a very important lesson.
By being wildly successful and then going to jail.
Womp, womp. Womp. Sad trombone.
Okay. So like, the producer's movie, you know, they have, like, the little ladies in the courtroom – your version, do they do anything extra in that scene?
In which scene?
So, like, this is after the play becomes a hit and it's been discovered that they've been cooking the books and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's Gene Wilder or Matthew Broderick's emotional plea to the people in the room, including the little old ladies who are all there.
Mm-hmm. In the courtroom?
In the courtroom, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Actually, I'm surprised that you didn't bring up what happened to the little old ladies with the explosives.
Oh, right.
And
yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Both.
And what I would like is there to actually, that to be a much more little old lady inclusive scene. I would love it if, in fact, it was the correct fuse being used. And in fact, it was just a little old lady running out and switching them out and all sorts of stuff like that. Oh my God, guys. Do you remember the drunk? Mm-hmm. The drunk who was in the bar, who kept them there, who got them really sloshed. The drunk who then was the one who exploded everything. Ladies and gentlemen. That drunk was another little old lady in disguise.
Yeah, I don't. What was the bar scene in the Broadway remake? I don't think it was. So.
They went straight to
goddamn shame.
Yeah, I actually made a note where I said in the 20 or 20 whatever version, I missed the scene where Max and Leo are at the bar realizing the play was a hit, and they're just. Depressed.
Yeah, but see, there was a drunk who's on the other end of the bar, and, you know, was largely, you know, turned away and stuff like that, and they're happily buying him drinks. And then by the time that drunk comes over to hang out with them, they are thoroughly sloshed. And so I think it would be a great opportunity for one of the little old ladies, in fact, the one who was very into play acting, would be perfect. And then comes in and explodes them later. I think that this would be a brilliant way to, and frankly, it takes care of the problem of why is there a drunk who's there for only these two scenes? Yeah. You know, they needed a convenient joke. No, no, she's more than a convenient joke. She's foreshadowed with her foreplay. What? Dun 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 dun.
Comedy.
So, bus throwing or throwing under buses, right? Right, Kat?
Yeah. Did you tie her up?
What?
Okay, cool. I have the bus on the GPS, so I'm tracking it.
You know what? This seems super premeditated.
And then let's say, and now. Hey, Pip.
Wow, you guys. Wow. Alex, did you want to go last?
I guess I am now.
He was driving the bus, Pip.
I actually did not hear his voice in all of that. That was you two.
Actually, Pip, I was providing music.
God damn it.
Did you not hear
me going? I was too busy being offended to pay attention to who was doing what.
This is a team effort.
Did you not hear me doing the classic echo suspense in his music.
I thought it was Brendan.
No, Brendan was doing the car driving. That was him.
In which case, it was all very seamless. I'm very proud of you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, we are goddamn professionals here.
Impulse.
Can't see the look I'm giving you.
Oh, wait. What's that line from Singing in the Rain?
What was it? The line, your dignity?
Yes.
Always dignity.
Dignity. Always dignity.
A great line in general, because he's saying that and then you see on the screen how Singing in the Rain is a masterpiece of filmmaking.
It is. And I think particularly in light of the producers.
Yes.
Yeah. One day in the future No Story is Sacred.
Yes. Because we all know what's happening in that jazz scene, don't we?
Fun fact, for two of my film classes in undergrad, one for the, so this is how movies are made in general sort of class, and this is the intro to criticism class, I watched Singing in the Rain for both of them, required.
Nice.
Because it's just a great example of filmmaking. Anyway,
so Pip, you got hit by a bus.
I did get hit by a bus.
So now that you've recovered from your concussion, or have you?
So Kat went for the women are awesome angle.
Yep.
I'm going to go for the men are trash angle.
Playing the type, hey, Pip?
Yep.
Oh. Yep.
Lean into what I know. And I know that men are trash.
Oh.
Hey.
Sorry, you guys.
Hey, Pip, you got that truck?
See, let's do this thing. Anyway, So sort of the other side of Kat's coin. So I was watching the movie and just being kind of creeped out by Max Bialystock.
Mm-hmm.
He is a perv.
That's fair.
Yep.
You know, he's sort of a con artist. He's a jerk, to put it mildly. He's sort of gaslighting Leo in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, what scheme? Your scheme.
Yep.
You know, turning Leo's perfectly innocent thought exercise.
Well.
Well, because Leo is an accounting nerd, and he was looking and going, oh, hey, this is a thing that could theoretically happen. Not that anyone would. That's bad. And so he's doing all this. He actually seduces Leo into doing it. He takes him on a date.
Yeah, he does.
So there's another version of this where it's the rom-com.
Yeah, it is.
But I'm making it a sort of a psychological thriller. I'm going to strip out all the comedy.
Oh. All right.
Because who needs it? And I'm making Max Bialystock an actual sociopath.
Okay.
And he's just ruining people's lives left, right, and center.
Okay.
And sure, maybe he goes down in the end, but he's taking people down with him. They do property damage in the end.
They do.
They blew up a veer.
Like, that's bad shit.
Actually, and also, it doesn't make a lot of sense either. It's not like he owns the theater. Like, does he?
No, he rents it.
Yeah, so, like, how does that... He's not the one who would get any money from the fraud, from the, like, insurance claim.
But it would stop the show?
Okay.
Yeah, it's just done to stop the show.
But I imagine the show could then reopen somewhere else.
Like, that's, like, the whole plot turning point from Shakespeare in Love.
And then... there's all the media attention to the show because their theater blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
People would go just for the thrill.
Yeah.
Like when people went to Spider-Man Homecoming when they found out that people were getting, like, seriously injured.
Spider-Man...
not Homecoming, sorry.
Enter the Dark.
Spider-Man Into the... Well, when people found out that people were actually getting injured, and I believe they actually managed to get more tickets sold when that came out.
I was thinking about it, man. Yeah. I was like, man, I want to go see this
That's
thing
like
now.
A modern Macbeth, except, you know, like, not good.
Says you.
But yeah, and I don't have a ton more than that other than Max is a whirlwind of terrible, and he draws everyone into his terribleness.
Okay, but what happens to Springtime for Hitler? Because that's funny.
It ruins the lives of all the people involved. Like, this director, you know, who has good intentions, is now the guy who directed a Hitler play.
Well, what if it wasn't a comedy? Like, what if, like, we're going full stream ahead with Pip's thing here. What if instead of it being funny, they made the play that, you know, that Liebkind wanted? Serious, really portraying, like, And like, so people are like sitting here being like, what am I watching?
Oh my God. Actually, I think of something that could ruin the lives of all the people involved in the production. Mm-hmm. Instead of Springtime for Hitler, it's Springtime for Stalin. Remember, it's the 1960s. We're talking like still McCarthy era, right?
Oh. I think so. Sure.
All of a sudden, yeah.
Oh.
Way darker. So everybody gets reported to the House Un-Americans Committee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the union gets shut down, kids.
Yeah.
Can't have no commie unions.
Man, that's kind of a downer play.
Jeez, how I roll, yo.
Good job. Yeah,
because when she said psychological thriller, I thought, laugh a minute.
Aren't they all?
Basically, I'm going to make this movie depressing as shit.
Apparently.
Yeah. Way to go, Pip.
Listen, it's not my fault that Max Bialystock creeped me out.
Fair.
Monster Bialystock.
And Gene Wilder looks so, let's face it, innocent. Beautiful. Yeah, innocent, big blue eyes, curly blonde hair. He looks like the stereotypical angel. Ooh. Which is why he was such a great Willy Wonka.
Good day, sir.
good day.
I can't remember, in this 1967 version, did he have like the little blanky thing as well?
Yes.
Okay.
That
didn't really effectively come back.
No, it did not.
No.
Nope.
That's because Matthew Broderick did not do the, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking it didn't come back in the storyline.
Yeah, no, it didn't.
Nah, it was just meant to portray him as kind of sheltered or childlike.
Or suffering a mental illness.
That too.
Easily susceptible to Max's charms. Yeah. I will also say, though, little old lady's conspiracy. Could have done something with that blanket. I'm just saying.
Aw.
You could have seen one of them knitting a new one in the corner.
Would the little old ladies have gotten pity for Max, or not Max, for Leo in the end? And
yeah, he's one of them.
He looks in the mirror. He is a little old lady in the inside.
Exactly.
Though at the end, Leo is now, you know, overselling the shares, you know, for prisoners of love.
That's true.
He fell.
Oh, getting the religion in there.
I didn't even mean to.
In the third quarter? Yeah. That's a time in sports ball.
You tried.
Thank you. But you're right. He did. He succumbed.
Well, that's in the original.
We can change it.
We can fix it.
But not in mine. The depressing as shit one.
Oh, yeah. And you're depressing as shit one. I mean, he becomes kind of like an apt pupil situation here.
He goes on and does it to others.
Oh, the cycle of
abuse. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh.
This is what you get for making me go next.
Well, I'm kind of glad we did, because maybe Al can take us out and get us out from this mental low place and bring some yucks. Come on.
Kill off characters. Listen, all my favorite musicals have a body count, so really.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, Alex, we bought you as much time as we could.
Right. Pulling this bus into the station. Wait, there's something stuck to the undercarriage.
Oh
no.
Your sisters.
Oh no.
And that's your rewrite. Well, then. Hello.
Right then.
Hey listeners, just editor Brendan here letting you know that we had a little bit of a recording mishap happen during the recording of the producers. So the first half is what you just listened to, and basically we lost all the footage for the second half. Oops. Always check that your monitor is recording, guys. Important lesson. So just keep on listening. We did a kind of a follow-up recording the next night, just kind of touch off where we left off, and hope you enjoy the rest of the program. Thanks.
Get back into there. Get back into there. Yeah. Okay, right, so, okay. My vision is for Springtime for Hitler, the movie.
Wait.
What?
No, wait, what? So, like, but technically, we've seen the producers of the movie, so...
Well, no. Like,
speak further.
Max Bialystock this time is not a stage producer, not a theater producer. He is a movie producer. And he is looking to make a movie adaptation of the musical Springtime for Hitler.
Wait, is it the same Max? Is this like an alternate universe or?
It's same universe. I'm just using Max Bialystock as a kind of catch-all. Oh, who knows? Maybe it could actually be Max. Maybe it could be his kid, his grandkid.
Wait a second. Are you implying that Max Bialystock had children?
He did sleep with a lot of old ladies.
I was hoping that Max Bialystock was a Highlander.
I was going to say, are you implying that old ladies can have children?
Yeah, maybe.
Science fiction.
One of them maybe was still like, you know, fertile, whatever.
Or we saw him sleeping with the little old ladies. There might have been others.
True.
If we want to veer it from a non-creepy place.
Well, you're one to talk.
He was a creep. There is every possibility. No, there is a certainty that he visited prostitutes.
Ew. Oh. Oh, well, to be fair, you know what, though? You're right, because Ula.
Wait, what are you saying about Ula?
Ula is a toy he bought.
That's how he views them, not necessarily her profession.
Look, there's nothing wrong with sex workers. I'm just saying. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with her being a sex worker, if that's the case.
No.
Like, everyone's like, we're just going to leave that.
No.
Like, no.
Let's just say that he visited downtown a couple times.
So regardless, somehow, somewhere, someway, Max Bialystock
procreated.
And now are we in modern day?
Yeah, like mid-2000s, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, around late 2000s into mid-2015, like when there was a big musical adaptation boom.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mamma Mia. There was a whole musical number about it at the Oscars. It had Hugh Jackman and Beyonce.
Ooh.
Yeah. And let's just say it's legit.
Pip's just happy.
And let's just say that not all of them really made the cut.
Okay, so this is a universe where Springtime for Hitler existed. The movie, I'm sorry, the movie The Producers does not, but the reality is what we're in.
Yeah.
And so this is some future point. Springtime for Hitler was a musical. It was a wildly successful one. Played longer than Cats. And now in this future point, we have Max Bialystock's grandson or spiritual successor or something.
Or a Highlander, so it's the same guy.
Same guy. and
there can only be one Max.
No, and, there can only be one Leo.
Oh, there can only be one Leo.
Slice.
And so now this film is, he wants to, what?
He also knows about his grandpa's scheme.
Okay.
And he also knows that he chose the wrong script, the wrong director, the wrong cast. Where did he go right? So this time around, he's not going to make the same mistakes. Because Max Bialystock was just doing the, and choosing all the wrong elements had created gold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, created something more than the sum of its parts. But this time, Max Bialystock 2.0, Maximum Bialystock.
Max to the future. Go on.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
That's amazing. Keep going.
He's going to try, like, still with the same script, it was still same premise as for Springtime for Hitler, but he's going to try to do it right.
Just so I'm clear, he's trying to do the same scheme, create a flop, get the money?
Yeah.
Or is he actually trying to make a good film?
You'll make a flop, you'll take the money. You know, producers do it all the time.
So he's trying to do, like, Hollywood accounting.
Yeah.
Okay. That special kind of accounting.
Yeah. No, this time he's going to, it's just the script that's going to be bad. But he's going to choose the right director, the right actor, the right crew. And it's going to be taken so seriously, and it's going to be such a fucking love letter to Hitler that no one will like it.
He's going to let the bad play speak for itself without trying to add worse onto it.
Which we argued was part of the issue of the previous one, which is that he went, like, that the original Max Bialystock went just a tad too far.
Yeah.
If he just let it speak for itself.
Yeah.
Just let the bad movie or bad play be a bad play.
Yeah.
So Al, how does he get hoisted by his own petard then?
First, we have to, like, talk about, you know, the directors and the actors and all that.
Oh, okay.
For his director, he needs a, since everyone has already seen the Springtime for Hitler, it just had a great revival. Everyone knows about it. So, but this time he's going to tell the director, hey, you know what? You should challenge the audience. Yeah, and directors, when they hear that, director to do that. He's going to try to incept the director to do that.
Well, all you have to do is, like, you know what? What goes really well with the Oscars? You know, what's been successful? Drama. You know, everybody knows that, you know, the really emotional historicals.
When was the last time a musical won Best Picture?
Such a good question.
La La Land. No, but then.
Oh, snap!
Right.
For the record, Moonlight was a great film if you guys haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know. That was just a joke at the Oscars' expense.
I know. I just wanted to...
And for our actor, a great actor, though recently disgraced.
Disgraced how?
Disgraced in the way we know.
I don't want to give anybody, even when our guy is planning a flop, I do not want to give our imaginary asshole even the slightest glimmer of success.
You're right.
What if we step back and say just disgrace due to weirdness? I'm struggling to think of.
Kat, what do you got?
Who's the guy who puts a paper bag on his head? Who's a cannibal?
Actual cannibal. Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf!
That song actually creeped me out. I can't listen to it.
That song's amazing. So what do you think of that, Al?
I love it.
It would be so great because
he gets all method about it.
He gets method, but like imagine he's a guy who can act. He actually can act. We can get the Max Bialystock character being like, you know, talking about how this could be real art as opposed to, you know, what Shia has been doing in the past that he has been actively like, rebelling against. But the Max character could, in his own private thoughts, be like,
perfect.
No, it doesn't matter how seriously he takes it. People are just going to see Shia LaBeouf. Yeah. Except then
he acts the fuck out of it. Yeah. But what our producer forgets is with movies, there's post production.
Dun dun dun. Oh. How do you mean?
It's like, that's brilliant. What?
Well, maybe he an editor or catches wind, or maybe someone actually watches the first cut and goes, oh God, this isn't a movie. This is a love letter to Hitler.
Oh God.
And not in a good, actually Oscar winning kind of way. Cause I hate to say it. There's like probably people out there who would be like, I could do that. Oh wait, what's that German movie that was made into a meme ages ago?
There's Screaming
of the
Hitler.
Wills, Triumph of the Wills, no,
something like the I one, don't know. Anyway,
the one where everyone like, what's the thing nerds are angry about? Let's have Hitler shout about it.
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
sorry. Right, go on. Now.
So the editor, the heroic editor,
pretty much pulls a Star Wars.
Wait, what do you mean by pulls a Star Wars?
Oh, you haven't heard about this guy?
No.
The original cut of Star Wars was not that great. It was serviceable, but
not good.
You mean like the original? The
original,
Star Wars.
Original. Yes.
New Hope.
Because remember, George Lucas was directing it.
Yeah. Oh.
But what happened, Kat? Mm-hmm. Is George Lucas's wife edited the film, and it was the cut you see today. It was just that good, especially compared to the original cut. So it was literally saved in editing.
Have we ever seen the original? Because that would be fascinating.
I think it is out there, and you know that George Lucas has been trying to add in his old stuff bit by bit.
And pieces.
Like, oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's too bad.
Well, you know that scene where Han Solo totally has that necessary conversation with his Jabba in the first movie?
No.
That was...
Really?
That was in the original, yes.
That was in the original. It got removed, and then it got because added it's back bullshit. In with the CG. Mm-hmm. Yeah. CG Jabba.
Okay, I'm sad now.
CG Jabba, you are really fake. Oh, this is after Christmas, though. Damn it.
Yeah, this is not Mos Chris anymore, guys.
Yeah.
Come on.
Something Uary. Yeah, there we go. Something Uary.
Something Uary, yeah.
The new plot Uary.
right.
Anyway, so saved in the edited.
Yeah. You know, and our editor is doing this because if it is a flop, then Max Bialystock, being a producer, can just fuck off to Rio with his money because that's what producers do. While everyone else, also on the team, specifically the crew, aren't going to get their residuals.
Son of a bitch.
I bet he's also lying to, like, everybody on the crew about what exactly the movie is about.
Oh, yeah, well, everyone on the crew, it's like, oh, we're doing a Spring Fire aimed for Hitler.
That hilarious farce.
Yeah.
Yeah, pay it straight. And then the hilarity will come in everyone's reactions.
guys, based on what you just told me about Lucas's wife, can the plucky editor be a little old lady? From the little old lady conspiracy?
The little old ladies.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. Sure. Oh, she's close to retirement.
Yep. Out of fucks to give.
So she can do that shit. So she can be like, I got nothing left to lose and everything to gain.
Totally not script doctor or Carrie H. Fisher.
Aww. Well, now we know who would have played it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Rest in peace, Carrie Fisher.
All right.
I think that we all remember how Carrie Fisher died.
Drowning in moonlight, strangled by her own bra.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's what she would have wanted.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So that's your idea there?
Yeah. Though I still don't have a Leo Bloom, but, you know. Who cares?
Yeah, we don't need a Leo Bloom. Hollywood has, like, that's become standardized now.
I mean, honestly, though, you could just have Leo Bloom be the actual accountant, the one who's doing the bullshit.
Mm. Or Leo Bloom. You know, kid, I was with your grandfather that day when we decided to do Springtime for Hitler, you know?
Oh, so Leo Bloom kind of plants the idea, and is it the original one?
Yeah, and maybe innocently, like...
Let me tell you stories of the old days.
Yeah.
Ah, it's the funniest thing. We meant for it to fail.
Meant for it to fail, you say?
Really? Why? Yeah. Tell me in detail.
Like, yeah, sure, kid, but give me back my blue blanket.
Oh.
I'd like to hope that he's over that stuff then.
No, wait, he bequeaths the blue blanket to him.
Let's just get rid of the blue blanket. I'm just going to call that one out, unless the little old ladies are knitting it. Dad.
Okay. Anyways, that is what I have.
Ah, cool. I think it's a different take than what we said earlier, so hey.
Well, also, and I like the idea of, future casting this and doing the same gag, but with different jokes. Does that make sense?
Modernizing it?
Yeah. Well, no, like the idea of, the gag is that you're trying to create something that will fail so that you get money. But the way they're going about it in this different medium is entirely different. There are different things that you can fuck up in movies to try to get the same result. So it's very much it's a nice callback to the original while not reusing the jokes.
Not being a total retread, yeah.
Exactly.
Huzzah. And I do like the idea of like a character flaw being like, well, those guys fucked up royal. Nah, but I know they fucked up, so I won't do it.
Yeah.
I'm better.
I won't make the same mistakes.
Make new and better mistakes.
Make new and better ones.
Shinier.
More interesting. Okay.
So, we did, the four story treatments there with minor technical difficulties.
Fight me.
Are you got?
Hey.
Take this outside.
Hey.
Take it outside.
Hey. Pip wasn't the only one with problems, Cat.
Whoa.
What?
What? I honestly feel so attacked right now.
Yeah, because you are.
Well, speaking of attacks, are you guys ready for the game?
Woo!
The game.
The game. The game.
I don't think that segues, but who cares?
Who cares? That's okay, because you know what, guys? I know the game.
What is the game for today, Kat?
It's eerily like the game we picked yesterday.
What game yesterday? What?
Oh, there was no game yesterday. We weren't recording yesterday. Where are we, guys?
No.
Definitely. No, this all happened in one session.
What? This is
there take. Was no multiple recording sessions.
All right. So the game today, guys, is one I think that we have not done on the show yet, which is a butterfly flaps its wings. What happens if you make one small change early on?
Oh.
So what happens to the story if very early in the story, you just change one little thing? What happens from there?
So it sounded like, because you were kind of eager to pick this one, Kat, that you may have had an idea about it.
Oh.
Maybe?
You have to have
sure,
one now.
Sure, yeah. What? What's the rule? Yes and? Yes.
Yes and I fuck did. You.
So, okay. Simple, right from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
The beginning of the story requires that Leo Bloom be an... Well, it doesn't even require. It just is. That Leo Bloom, the accountant, be an innocent. He gets seduced to the dark side, and much comedy comes from there.
Metaphorically, literally, who knows?
Come on, Leo, and together we can rule Broadway.
And make out. So, okay, change it. I say that actually Leo Bloom is not... an innocent. He is a malevolent actor. He has appeared on the scene. He has sought out Max Bialcek. We don't know where he actually came from. He's like, yeah, I got sent here from, like, the accountant. Like, what? No. He's shown up. He's like, don't worry. I'll do your books. Do. Oh, hey. What? How strange. You could probably make a lot of money doing this. Hint.
Hint.
What's that you say? Coughing. That's what I'm doing.
I'm sorry. I dropped this hint right here. Let me pick that up for you.
Oh, what's this? It's a clue by four.
I said you could fraud people. Jeez.
So he is evil. He's worked. His entire plan was to get money riding the coattails of this famous person who has all the connections. He could then
take all the money and head to Rio.
Basically, yeah. Like, he's saying ahead of time, he's, you know, he has in the actual script, in the original, he was like, yeah, oh no, I'll turn state's evidence or whatever and turn us in. It's like, no, don't do that. Well, okay, I won't do that. No, that was his plan the entire time. Everything's in Max's name. You'll notice everything is in Max's name. Leo's not in there, is he?
Uh-huh.
No.
True.
So, yeah, it's a different story, but by God, it's one I think would work. particularly if it's a reveal at the end. You know, he's giving that speech and then he throws what's his head under the bus.
Max under the bus.
And then we get like a flashback of like all the times when he was actually being evil.
And so he starts walking away like the usual suspects and tosses the blue blanket.
Oh my God. Or like, did you guys ever watch Scary Movie?
Not for a very, very long time.
If you're referring to the end of that, they were
parodying Usual Suspects.
That was damn it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, fine. I have not seen The Usual Suspects. I watch shittier movies. So
I'd say it's a good movie, but it stars a certain disgraced actor.
Disgraced actors.
So let's see. So you have Leo is evil from the beginning.
That's my early change. All right. Well, that's me. Next, I'm picking Alex.
Right. Okay.
Alex.
Right.
Okay. So a small change from the beginning, Alex.
Yeah. This time they go for the Kafka script.
The cockroach one?
Yeah.
Whoa. Wait. Whoa!
I mean, it is a small change to just pick a different script.
Yeah.
But it changes the entire...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the game.
A butterfly flaps its wings.
Okay, so how do they fuck up Kafka?
They make it a musical?
Yeah.
No, to be fair, I would watch Metamorphosis the musical.
Yeah. But this time around, they don't try to mess with the... But, like, with Big Green Temp for Hitler, they needed a bad director and all that. For Kafka, the script, you need just bad material.
So it was, like, bad props?
Yeah. Like, instead of having it look, you know, halfway authentic, just put some freaking an antenna on him.
Okay. So does the play still become a hit, or is it a flop in the end?
I don't know.
No, that's the exercise. You have to know.
That's not actually part of the exercise.
Yeah.
Shut up. That's a part of the podcast. Go. Make that shit up, yo.
It's entirely possible they get away with it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So the film ends with Max and Leo on a beach in Rio.
Yeah. Hey, that rhymed.
Yeah.
You were a poet, and you were not aware of it.
And I didn't even realize, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a bad shout-out to Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
That was a joke long before Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I just want to say Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Fair enough.
No, norm morality, no lesson learned. Just, they won. They won.
But what happens at the end of Metamorphosis?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because I bet if any of us actually knew that plot, we could tie it into that and we'd look really clever.
And so Max and Leo become cockroaches themselves.
Metaphorically.
But you could make a really interesting thingy between...
what they're doing and what they're becoming and the play and all that.
Yeah.
They're becoming monsters.
Monsters.
They are the vermin of the play world.
Oh, wait. It becomes a psychological thriller as they try to make this horrible play and they find themselves changing.
Oh, yes!
Dun, dun, dun.
That's amazing.
I am here for the psychological thriller version.
Right.
I just really like psychological thrillers.
Right,
you think I don't, so I don't know what I'm doing.
Really?
I like musicals.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty established by now.
Yeah.
All right. So let me bring this back to the realm of the fantastical then. What I'm thinking, guys, I had a little bit of time to think about this. I'm thinking, you know those little old ladies?
Yeah.
Hear me out here. I'm buying into the little old lady.
Them at all.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, wait.
Little old ladies?
The little old lady conspiracy.
Yeah, so I'm buying into the little old ladies now.
Yes.
So what I'm thinking is they're not plural little old ladies. They're actually all just one. It's a witch or an enchantress. We're bringing in the supernatural into this, and she's teaching Max and Leo a supernatural lesson about, I don't know, being dicks or something.
Yes!
The classic lesson. Don't be a dick, yeah. Or I'll turn your servants into furniture.
Yeah, that'd be unfortunate.
Oh my God, and that works so well.
I knew you'd be in for the little old ladies, so.
Gotta have the little old ladies, man.
Well, you didn't see me pumping my fist over here, because I am all for the supernatural version as well.
Look, little old ladies are magic. That's all I'm going to say there. And just imagine all the weird shit that can start happening when those ladies are magic. And now I'm waving my fingers. Yeah, that's the change I'm doing there. I have no idea what's going to happen in the end there, but I just know that magic's going to be involved. Maybe the theater blows up in a shower of magical fireworks and who knows what the hell else. Yeah, so that's my contribution there with a butterfly flaps its wings. We're having magical little old ladies and continuing the tradition of the ladies in this
Bibbidi
episode.
Bobbidi fuck you.
I like how the small change is magic.
Yeah. Hey, it's changing one thing at the beginning.
Well, the one thing you're changing is that there's not multiple little old ladies. There's only one. And therefore, you have to work from that point onward. Why? How is there only one? Why is there only one?
Little old lady in the entire world.
Man, this could be a big realization for Max when he finally realizes that was all one lady the entire time. Who is magic? And wants to teach him a lesson.
Does that mean, you know, those checks were fairy gold?
Oh.
Fairy gold.
Fairy checks.
Oh, man. See, that's my contribution.
Love it.
All right. So that leaves me. Mine is...
And then there was one.
How are you going to do this, Pip? How are you going to wow us?
Take us home, Pip.
You are required to wow us. It has to happen.
Well, I'm not sure I can follow magic. That wasn't cool. But, you know, in terms of, you know, small changes in the beginning, Leo goes to the cops at the start.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
You mean like he threatened to do at the end?
Yeah. I mean, he sees this, you know, bad thing that people aren't supposed to do. Max is all in. So he goes to the cops and goes, this is what's going on. And maybe at that point it becomes a sting operation and, you know, he's conning the con artist or whatever for justice.
Leo, you are wearing a wire.
Yeah. Oh God, he'd be so anxious with the wire on. It'd be hilarious.
Oh, he'd be like scratching it the entire time. But Max, because he's not all that aware, doesn't really realize that's not the usual nervous tick.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then like at the end, like during the trial, he could be like,
oh yeah, that's the reveal.
Of course. He could like just suddenly reveal the wire and rip it out. And
so why are you wearing a wire at court?
And then he turns and he gives like this heartfelt, I'm sorry, Max, but it just had to happen. And it turns out that because of course, when you're in deep cover, you have to have somebody that you like communicate with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Uh-huh. On the inside. It's a little old lady.
Oh, this freaking little old lady did me in.
We were always on the satellite.
Wait, does that mean also it was recording thing when he was with Ula?
Let's just say he turned it off during that and just move on.
At this point, I have to admit, I'm not sure how wires work. In police setting, I know how wires in terms of technology works.
Are you certain, Pip?
I was about to go and do a really sarcastic explanation of how basic conductivity works, but okay, we'll save that for another time.
I'm willing to bet if you actually tried to explain wires to me, I would suddenly get confused by the whole thing.
But, okay, moving on. Any other ideas with that, Pip?
No, mine's just really simple. He goes to the cops because he's a good man.
Okay, so that was four butterflies there, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very pretty, majestic butterflies.
They were beautiful, guys. And you know what? They floated off in four different directions. And
did they float or fly?
Don't question me.
I think one of them was a moth.
Oh. Well, I think one of them was a little old lady.
Yeah, no, that sounds right.
In disguise.
I did like how I think over the course of this episode, we basically established the little old lady cinematic universe.
Yes.
Yes. And now they will appear in, even if I don't mention it, they will appear in every single one of my rewrites from now on.
No, no.
Whether they'll be like, oh my God, they'll be like Stanley. You know, like or Alfred Hitchcock, just in the background, there's a little old lady, and you'd be like, that's how I know it's one of Cat's stories.
Nice.
Thank you.
Random little old lady. So, Cat, do you want to take us out here?
Yes, sir, I do. As always, listeners, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred or send an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Crichton. Editing for this episode done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we talk about and take apart our first listener, Plot Bunny.
Wait, what? What's a plot? I will cover it then, I'm sure.
We will cover it next episode, but it's the first one of a thing. So tune in.
Nice.
Until then, we're No Story is Sacred, and any story can be changed. I'm Kat.
I'm Pippin.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Brendan.
And we're...
No Story is Sacred.
Wow.